This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The U.S. Senate has started the process of voting for a bill to lift the government's $31.4 trillion debt ceiling. Reuters' Chris Dingham reports.
The bill is now in the Senate, where we begin the process today of passing this legislation as soon as possible.
The deal to avert a catastrophic U.S. default rested with the Senate on Thursday. Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said he would try to fast-track the bill to suspend the debt limit, which passed the House of Representatives late Wednesday. Schumer's counterpart, Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell, also signaled that he would work for the bill's fast passage.
The bill the House just passed has the potential to cut federal spending by $1.5 trillion.
But it remained to be seen whether any of the other senators in the 100-member body, particularly hardline Republicans angry the bill did not include deeper spending cuts, would use the Senate's arcane rules to try to slow down the bill's passage.
With war in sight, failing to abide by a ceasefire, the White House announced sanctions in Sudan. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
The White House says it will levy sanctions against people who it says are, quote, perpetrating the violence in Sudan. The U.S. is imposing visa restrictions on officials from the warring Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces, along with leaders from the former Omar al-Bashir regime. On May 4th, President Biden issued an executive order that expanded U.S. authority to respond to the violence and help end the conflict. The U.S. is urging Sudan's warring sides to return to ceasefire talks and make a concerted effort to abide by a lasting truce after peace efforts collapsed yet again. Mike Hempen, Washington.
And for more news, please join us at voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Violence erupted in Senegal's capital, Dakar, on Thursday after a court sentenced firebrand opposition leader Ousmane Sonko to 2 years in jail for corrupting youth, a move that dims his hopes of contesting next year's presidential election. Sonko, President Macky Sall's fiercest opponent, was absent when the judgment was handed down. He also did not attend the trial. The United States retaliates for Russia's suspension of New START treaty by revoking visas of nuclear inspectors. Get more on that story from the AP's Lisa Dwyer.
The Biden administration is retaliating for Russia's suspension of the New START nuclear treaty. The U.S. is revoking the visas of Russian nuclear inspectors, denying pending applications for new monitors, and canceling standard clearances for Russian aircraft to enter U.S. airspace. The New START treaty is the last arms control treaty remaining between the U.S. and Russia. The State Department says the visa revocations and application denials, as well as a U.S. decision to stop sharing information on the status or location of missiles and telemetry data on test launches, were consistent with international law because of Russia's actions. The U.S. will, however, continue to notify Russia when it conducts test launches. The new measures are reversible should Moscow return to compliance with the treaty. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Countries that use the euro currency have seen a drop in inflation. AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports.
Europe's inflation took a positive turn with a significant drop to 6.1%. The annual figure in May eased from 7% in April for the 20 countries that use the euro currency. The drop is a welcome sign that the explosion in price increases, which peaked in record double digits last October, is heading in the right direction. However, prices are still posing a pinch to shoppers. Economists warn it will be many months before normal levels of inflation are reflected in price tags in shops. I'm Karen Chamas.
A passenger opened an emergency exit door during a plane flight in South Korea on Friday, causing air to blast into the cabin and slightly injuring 12 people, according to officials. The plane landed safely. Some people aboard the Asiana Airlines Airbus aircraft tried to stop the person, who was detained by airport police on suspicion of violating the aviation security law. According to authorities, the person's identity and the motive weren't immediately released. Iran carried out 142 executions in May, marking the highest number of people put to death in 1 month since 2015. The executions have prompted calls for more international pressure on Iran to at least decelerate the current pace of capital punishments. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Friday, June 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Unrestricted Senegal after a court sentence undermines the chances of a leading opposition politician to run for president next year.
Well, it's a good idea that we've been around for 60 years. Other countries went down almost immediately after independence. We've been lucky to remain a united, one nation with all our problems. We have made strides, successes, achievements. But again, it's a sad reality that 60 years after independence, many of the problems we inherited have not disappeared. Some have even gotten worse.
Kenyans celebrate 60 years of self-rule.
The measures that have been announced by the Minister of Finance are expected to firstly reduce the accelerated depreciation of the currency, and secondly, reduce the accelerated dollarization of the economy.
And Zimbabwe institutes measures to boost the value of its local currency and reduce demand for U.S. dollars. Those stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. Fresh unrest hit Senegal's capital Dakar on Thursday after court sentenced a leading opposition politician, Ousmane Sonko, to 2 years in jail for corrupting a youth. The ruling undermines his chances of running for president next year. The 48-year-old Sonko was accused of raping a woman who worked in a massage parlor in 2021 when she was 20 and making death threats against her. He denies wrongdoing and says the charges are politically motivated. A criminal court cleared Sonko of rape but found him guilty of a separate offense described in the penal code as immoral behavior towards individuals younger than 21. This could prevent him from participating in February 2024 elections, according to Senegal's electoral law. Sonko's Pastef party agrees that the verdict is part of a political plot and is calling on citizens to take to the streets. Earlier, I reached reporter Alpha Jalo in Dakar to find out more about the situation there.
Well, the situation is terrible at the moment here in the capital, especially in the heart of the capital. I will start first. At the university, the main university in Dakar, the School of Journalism, known as SESTI, has been completely ravaged by fire. The building is completely ravaged by fire, but they have also destroyed so many things. At the moment, there's no transport, no car is plying. The railway station, also they have stopped operation. And then even the main highway has been blocked. So in other parts of Dakar, everywhere people are manifesting and they are breaking shops. They are vandalizing businesses, and I got information that somebody has been shot in Ziguinchor, but it is not yet confirmed. But the situation is terrific at the moment.
How is the response from the security forces?
Where I am now in the other part, in the eastern part of the capital, there are running battles between the security forces and protesters. But then the protests are organized. They split into small groups, and there are so many. So what happened is that if they are being pursued by the security forces, an other group will come from an other section and start burning tires, blocking traffic. But the worst thing is that they are even burning a petrol station. We could bring in very serious consequences. And then most of the supermarkets here, they have been vandalized. The Osan supermarket, they normally suffer big losses whenever, this process, Ousmane Sonko, Ajisar, since the beginning, whenever this is always like this, they always, pay, the price. So it's terrible. And it is not only in Dakar, in Ziguinchor, in other regions, almost everywhere, all the region in Ziguinchor, all the region in Senegal, there are demonstration and protests at the moment I speak to you.
Where is Mr. Ousmane Sonko right now?
Until 4 o'clock, when I was leaving Sitekir Gorgi, where Mr. Sonko lived, he was still barricaded by the security forces. Until now, I have not got any information that he's being transported to prison, though the sentence is that he is going to serve 2 years in prison. But we don't know whether he's already been taken to prison. But until 4 o'clock, when I was leaving, because I had to walk almost, I had to trek for about, 3 kilometers, but there's no car. So I was lucky that somebody with a motorcycle just dropped me until not far away from where I live before I reached my house. But until now, we know that from the sources we are hearing from the radio, Mr. Ousmane Sonko, there's no confirmation that he has been taken to prison. Maybe until now, he is in his house barricaded by the security forces.
What's the government saying? Has there been a response from the government?
Apart from some of the low-key officials of the government, one of the high-profile government officials who made a statement, but we know I had the deputy president of the National Assembly this morning said that Senegal, there should be relief because so many people were saying that charges against Mr. Sonko are politically motivated. But they said that the judgment today shows that the government hasn't got any hand into this, you know, affair. Because if the government got any hand into this, then the government would have used whatever method it could to make sure that Mr. Sonko would be giving a very heavy prison sentence. Apart from Mr. Abdumbo, who is the deputy speaker at the National Assembly, there is no other. But Mr. Sonko's lawyers, they also were trying to clarify something. They said that the fact that it's 2 years prison sentence, there's also possibility of appealing. But then, according to the Senegalese justice system, if somebody is tried in absentia, his lawyers cannot do anything. And it is likely that he cannot even file an appeal. So that's the situation right now.
That's reporter Alpha Jallo. He spoke with me earlier from Dakar. Kenyans on Thursday celebrated 60 years since attaining internal self-government. Kenya attained internal slave rule from the British on June 1, 1963. Independence followed 6 months later. Herman Manyora is a professor at the University of Nairobi and a political analyst. I reached him in Nairobi by phone and began by asking him for his reflections on 60 years of self-governance.
Well, it's a good idea that we've been around for 60 years. Other countries went down almost immediately after independence. We've been lucky to remain a united, one nation with all our problems. We have made strides, successes, achievements. But again, the sad reality that 60 years after independence, many of the problems we inherited have not disappeared. Some have even gotten worse. We talked about ignorance, poverty, and disease. We are still wrestling with the same issues. So it's a mixed bag.
Kenya, as you are aware, was the only colony in that region. The Rex Uganda, for instance, was a protectorate. Yes. How did that impact an independent Kenya later on?
Of course, compared to our neighbors, Kenya was a settler colony. Yeah? Not just a colony by way of classification as opposed to protectorate and trust lands like Tanzania and so on and so forth. But also because it was basically settled by white settlers. And that has had a legacy, and that has an impact. Because for one, when the settlers left, they were replaced by black settlers in terms of mentality and everything else. So the brunt of colonialism rubbed on us a lot more than Tanzania and Uganda.
A comment on the leadership since from self-determination government to independence 6 months later, after today.
You know, we started well. There was a lot of excitement in 1963. Unfortunately, we lost course almost immediately when our leaders, instead of working for people who had fought for independence, went on a looting spree, primitive accumulation of wealth, thousands upon thousands of hectares of land, beach floors at the coast, and accumulating wealth, and thereafter, of course, protecting their offices, and then tribalism set in order that these people may protect their power and their wealth. So we've done badly in terms of nationalism. But like I said initially, although the leaders have done all these bad things that have derailed us, that have stopped us from realizing our potential, it is still also true that remaining a united country, not once falling completely under military government, is a plus that we must give our presidents who have been around for, I think there are five presidents, this is the fifth president. We really need to applaud them because our country didn't collapse under their hands.
Does that explain why Kenya's economy is even doing better in the region?
Yeah, of course, stability. You know, there's stability. There are issues of dictatorship, of one-party state, or sometimes of encroachment on democracy and human rights and good governance. All those are bad things. We have undergone all those. But this stability of having a government, that alone has enabled us to achieve what many of our neighbors have not been able to achieve.
That's Professor Herman Manyora of the University of Nairobi. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Zimbabwe's government has instituted several measures it says will increase demand for the local currency and raise its value, as well as reduce demand for the U.S. dollar. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, economists say the new measures will not work, as Zimbabweans have lost faith in the local dollar, which continues sliding against the greenback.
Among other measures announced by Muturi Ncube, Zimbabwe's Minister of Finance, all government agencies will now substantially collect fees in the local currency called bond or dollar. He added that all duties except on a few luxury items will also be paid in local currency. Persistence Gwanyanya is an economist who sits on the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe's Monetary Committee.
The measures that have been announced by the Minister of Finance are expected to firstly reduce the accelerated depreciation of the currency, and secondly, reduce the accelerated dollarization of the economy.
Since the announcement was made, the local currency jumped from about 1,900 to nearly 2,600 against the US dollar on the formal market. On the black market, is about 100% more, pushing costs of goods and services up. Ordinary Zimbabweans and businesses continue to shun the local currency, as in the case of Tawanda Gondo, a fruit vendor in Harare.
I still prefer sales made with the U.S. dollar so that I can restock and keep the balance. If I keep bond notes, when I think of buying U.S. dollars or I want to restock later, the rate would have changed. So I think the U.S. dollar is better.
Dollarization of the economy is what the government is against, as it says there are not enough U.S. dollars in the country to sustain the economy. But Gift Mugano, an economics professor at Durban University, says Zimbabwe's finance minister has no other way to turn around the economy.
For now, you must dollarize, full stop, because the Zim dollar has lost the value, so you can't force a dead currency on people. Even government is refusing the Zim dollar. Go to the passport. You can't get a passport in Zim dollar. So who am I to take the Zim dollar? He is saying that he's going to be encouraging the use of Zim dollar for payment of levies and duties. But he's not talking about income taxes.
Mugano said after dollarizing, Zimbabwe needs to work on increasing production. Then when it reintroduces its own currency, it will have value and businesses and people like Gondo will not shun it. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Friday, June 2nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And see to come on our program, Samson Omali with Sports. The United States Department of the Treasury on Thursday announced sanctions against four companies affiliated with Sudan's warring parties. Two of the companies, Al Junaid Multi Activities Company Limited and Tradive General Trading LLC, are associated with paramilitary leader Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo and his family, while Defense Industry Systems and Sudan Master Technology are controlled by the Sudan Armed Forces. The White House also announced that it's also imposing visa restrictions against actors perpetuating the violence in Sudan. The two announcements came one day after the army withdrew from ceasefire talks with the paramilitary rapid support forces in the Saudi city of Jeddah as fighting continues between the rival military factions. Nabil Biagio spoke with Cameron Hudson, senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, to understand the significance of the move and its impact on the warring parties.
They've certainly picked the right companies to target. These are companies that are at the heart of the military corporate establishment. But I don't think that coming as they do 6 weeks or 7 weeks into the conflict, that they're necessarily going to get the attention or strike fear or get the generals, frankly, to change their calculus about this war. It feels a bit like a warning shot, but that warning shot is coming well into the conflict already. So I'm not quite sure what the impact is going to be, if any, on the warring sides.
And in terms of economic interests and assets that can be affected by the sanctions and the visa restrictions, some people say, for example, Dagalo wouldn't care much about U.S. sanctions. His interests are with Russia and the Gulf countries and Libya. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think what was not announced with this was a diplomatic strategy for how they see these sanctions being pursued and applied. I think without the cooperation of countries like the UAE, where some of these countries have their corporate headquarters, then I think there's no chance of these having any kind of impact. So certainly with Russia, I don't think Russia will be dissuaded at all. So some of the businesses and some of the countries that are already doing business with these entities, I think that they're unlikely to be dissuaded from continuing their work. But with countries like UAE, which has presumably been a U.S. ally and presumably the U.S. has an open channel of communication with, if they can't get them to equally apply these sanctions, then I think there's probably very little hope that they're going to have an impact.
And with regard to the military, the U.S. would also want an ally like Egypt to cooperate. Is that correct?
Well, presumably, yes. I think that, again, if no one takes these sanctions seriously, if they continue to do business with these corporations, then I think there's going to be very little impact. And frankly, anybody who's going to be doing business with entities that are already at war and where they've already had a military junta overthrow the government, they're clearly, I think, not worried about the reputational risk or even the potential legal risk of doing business with these entities. So we have sanctioned, I think, what looks like low-hanging fruit. That's still important to do, but I don't think that we should expect there to be a shift in the war effort as a result of this.
The announcement did not include names or any specific individuals targeted with sanctions. Can we surmise that the two top generals, Burhan, the army chief, and Dagalo, the RSF commander, are targeted directly?
No, we can't surmise that they've been targeted directly. I think that this feels like a warning shot to them. On the RSF side, the companies that have been targeted are at the heart of the Dagalo family empire. And so I think that it is a warning shot to them. But I think the fact that none of the generals being targeted suggests to me that Washington continues to believe that those generals have a role to play in the political talks going forward, that they have a role to play in the Jeddah discussions. And I think that shows a kind of continuation of a misguided U.S. approach where we continue to prioritize the military actors in a political conversation going forward. And until we decide that those actors are no longer legitimate in the political talks, and we would decide that by sanctioning them directly, then I think we hold open the possibility that they continue to play a role, which is very dangerous.
That's Cameron Hudson, Senior Associate at the Center for Strategic International Studies. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio in Washington. A Nigerian economist says the government should repair the country's oil refineries to help cushion rising prices after fuel subsidies end. President Bola Tinubu, who took office on Monday, has said the subsidy will be removed. The announcement sent fuel prices soaring, in some places tripling to above 530 naira per liter, or about $1.20, as consumers rush to fuel up before the subsidy ends. Okay, Onochukwu is a professor of economics at the University of Port Harcourt. He tells reporter Mike Mbonyi that fuel retailers acted unscrupulously. But he says prices will ease if the government gets four disabled refineries working and the new Dangote refinery, Africa's largest, starts production on schedule next month.
It's very serious wickedness on the Nigerian masses by, you know, petroleum station owners. Because the old stock they have is still there. As the announcement just came, what they decided is to, you know, shoot price off in order to rip off Nigerians of their income. So I think that the government should try as much as possible and checkmate these petrol station owners so that they don't cause a serious problem in Nigeria. If you look at inflation rate now, it's very high, well above 26%. So it's still double digit, highly double digit. And if this pump price continue to rise like that, it will also shoot up price of other goods. So the impact presently is highly negative on the people. So government must take action in order to control what this pump, what the petrol station owners are doing. You know, I term it as wickedness, because Nigerian capitalism is such that will exploit and dehumanize the people.
Some analysts think that repair of Nigeria's four refineries is one way of lowering the price of fuel. Do you agree? And do you have other options or suggestions on how to alleviate the suffering of the people?
In terms of solution, you talk about refinery, I feel that one way to go is that government should try as much as possible to resuscitate the refineries that we have. I think we have about four refineries in Port Harcourt, Kaduna, and Warri. Those refineries, you know, should be resuscitated so that we can have these petroleum products all over the place. And you know that when you have quantity in abundance, that will also reduce the price.
That was Oke Onuchukwu, a professor of economics. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonyi on the telephone from Port Harcourt. It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here's Samson Omali in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sports with Africa Premier Football Club competition, the CAF Champions League. As many as 50,000 home supporters will be allowed to attend the first leg of the CAF Champions League final between Al Hakli of Egypt and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco. The Red Eagles are looking forward to beat Wydad in their competition's decider for the first time in their quest to lift the coveted trophy for a record 11th time. Marcel Koller's side will host the defending champions at the Cairo International Stadium on Sunday, June the 4th, before heading to Casablanca 7 days later for the second leg at what is expected to be a packed Mohammed V Stadium. Staying with football news, the Flying Eagles of Nigeria have secured a spot in the quarterfinals of the ongoing FIFA Under-20 World Cup after an impressive 2-0 victory over the host nation Argentina on Thursday night. Second-half goals from Ibrahim Mohamed and Haliru Seriki saw the Flying Eagles cruising into the last eight in style at the expense of Argentina at the San Juan Stadium. Coach Ladan Bozo said the victory over the host was expected, as the victory will boost the confidence of his side ahead of their quarterfinal fixture against Korea Republic.
We had a game plan against Argentina. We sticked on our game plan and we got it right. As far as I'm concerned, I think all the results I've seen so far, these are all expected end, because I believe in Egypt, we beat the Egypt team to deny them from qualification. In Niger, we beat the Niger team in one of the matches we played in Niger. And here, beating Argentina is not a new thing.
Staying with the FIFA Under-20 World Cup, Tunisia's national Under-20 team were knocked out of the round of 16 after losing 4-1 to their Brazilian counterparts at the Estadio Unico Diego Armando Maradona in La Plata, Argentina. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, June 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the